We're looking at the last sermon in this series of guidelines for Christian living. You turn to Romans chapter 12, and we're going to look tonight at verses 13 through 21. Now, as we've pointed out the last couple of times, the letter of Romans can be divided up into three parts. There's the doctrinal part, verses 1 through 11. It tells you a great deal about God's working and what God intends. It's in that section also that tells one how to be saved, discusses faith at some length, how to be saved, and then the results of faith and living faithfully and other things along that line. Comes over here to the practical part in Romans chapter 12, 13, and 14. And the personal part of Paul's letter, which he always has at the ending of his letters, you find largely in chapters 15 and 16. Chapter 12 is a summary of Christian living. A lot of good things in there, and a lot of things that are just, it's not just good advice. It's actually guidelines, things that we need to consider so that we might be the best servants that we possibly can. Romans chapter 12 starts off with, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God." And that brings to bear the fact that God has extended toward man mercy, the opportunity to be forgiven, to be a child of God. And once a child of God, there are certain things that are required of us, and there's a certain character that he expects out of his children. And so in chapter 12, you find some instructions that are given in order to develop that character. So let's look at the first thing here. We're going to look at verses, actually, 13 through 15, and call this that a Christian must be helping others and be sympathetic to others. So let's look at verse 13 through 15. Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. So we're to be practicing care for others. It says in some translations, it does. I've got the New King James, where it says distributing. But distributing is from the same word that you find fellowship. It's sharing things in common. It's that kind of thing. Could be spiritual things, and sometimes it's physical things as well. But it's not a case of this just being word only. We looked at a couple passages this morning in Bible study in James chapter 2. Well, we'll take a look at those again in verses 15 and 16, where it says, "If a brother or a sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Depart in peace, be warm and filled,' and you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit?" It also says in another place over in 1 John, I think it's chapter 3, verse 22, that if someone sees a brother need of the world's goods and shuts up his heart, well then, you know, he's hating his brother when he does something like that. So here in James it says not just word only, you know, well, I'm concerned, but actually I'm not doing a whole lot about it. In Romans it's talking about actually being involved in this. And then also we see in a passage like Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, I'm sure many remember that you do good to those who have a need. And so it's saying basically the same thing there. Now hospitality, another thing that's mentioned, if you turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9. Here it says that be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Well, there we go. The need for hospitality may be changed. And we might not need it like it was once necessary. But the pursuit of it hasn't changed. You know, it used to be, and I'm sure it was in New Testament times, travel was a very difficult thing. And it was that way for centuries, that people had to rely when traveling on the hospitality of others. You didn't go down some road somewhere, you know, and there were any number of motels and restaurants and things like that. They just didn't exist. And sometimes folks didn't have a whole lot of money where they might be able to pull into to an inn, or as they used to be called years ago, a tavern. A tavern actually was a place where you could sleep and eat. Yeah, they might have served some portions of old panther there every once in a while, but most generally, that's not what they were involved with. That changed as time changed. But even in this country, in the very beginning of this country, people had to rely on the hospitality of others whenever you were traveling. Now, the passage here talks about this extending hospitality to one another, and it says to do this without grumbling. You know, in our day and age, hospitality is to be shown, and we understand that that's part of what Christians are to do. I think sometimes where we get ourselves into trouble is whenever we try to decide what's the bottom line on hospitality. And when is it enough and when is it not enough? And when, well, this is going on and this is good and this is not and other things like that. And really, I think a lot of those decisions that people make along that line are made arbitrarily. We don't really have a whole lot in here. And, you know, if you have one or two people over, you're extending hospitality just the same as if you had 25 or 30 people over. So it's kind of a relative thing. And, yeah, people can get to going on about it one thing and another, you know. But nevertheless, you know, we're to show hospitality. And it says there, you know, that we'd be hospitable to one another. And now, again, you know, you see what's added to that without grumbling. It's not one of these kinds of things. Well, I guess we've got to be hospitable. So let's go ahead and get some of the brethren over here and get it over with. That might be extending hospitality, but it's not without grumbling. You ought to be glad to do this. We ought to appreciate the opportunities to spend some time together. Also, we find in verses 13 through 15 that the Christian is to react differently from the world in certain situations. Here's what we find. Let me back up there just a minute. I've gotten behind. Those who persecute intend to do harm. Now, we're not supposed to persecute, of course, but neither are we supposed to do any kind of harm in any way. You notice what the passages are telling us, that you bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. We must not retaliate. Now, and that's something that's important. The world that we live in is by and large based on retaliation. If something's done, then there's retaliation that's planned. If you've done this to me, I'll get you back, I'll do this, and so it goes. And that's generally the way things go. It goes that way on a personal scale. It might be that way with some of the people that you work with or you've gone to school with. Might even be that way sometimes in a family. I don't like to think it might be that way, but I'm not going to be naive enough to think that that doesn't happen in some families. But then we also realize on a large scale, you know, out there on the world scale, yeah, this business of retaliation is really what fuels and generates so many things. But the Christian is not supposed to retaliate. We are to practice the words of Jesus that you find back here in the Sermon on the Mount. Look at Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44 and 45, I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. And so we're to practice those words. We should pray for those who might misuse us or persecute us. That's quite a bit different from the retaliation, isn't it? And then do you remember what happened with Stephen when Stephen was being stoned? What did he do there? Acts chapter 7, verse 60. He actually said in a prayer right before he died from the stoning, that what they were doing be held not to their charge. You'll forgive them. And that's quite different, too. A lot of times I think whenever something's happening to someone, that they might be making threats right up to the last breath that they have. That wasn't the case with Stephen, and it's a real good example there for us. And it keeps in mind what Jesus said, and also what we find here in Romans chapter 12. Also, here's another thing. There are many are unhappy when others succeed or gloat when they fail. Now we know that. That's kind of a sorry thing to bring up, I understand. But that happens. I think sometimes that might even happen among those who are Christians. And if it does, it's not supposed to be that way. We see how we're supposed to be. It tells us right here, Romans chapter 12 and verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. We're to be empathetic. Now, sympathetic, yes, that's right. That's part of it, but also empathetic. In other words, it's one of these things where we're not just saying, you know, I feel your pain. We really are doing that. And there's more sincerity to it than there are just words. We're really trying to associate and understand and have a connection, a rapport with the person who's rejoicing as well as the person who may be weeping. We're to function as a unit, we find, if you remember back there in chapter 12, verse 4. And I pretty well guarantee, you know, that you just consider your own body for just a moment or two. If you've got an elbow hurting, somehow or another, a couple months ago, I sprained my elbow putting dishes up in the cabinet. I don't know. I just did, you know. And that bothered me. The next day, I couldn't hardly pull my billfold out of my pocket. But I'm telling you, that hurt enough that the rest of my body pretty well knew about it. Isn't that the way it is with yours? Yeah. If you got one part of it hurting, all the rest of it knows. Now, this quit. I got a few things to help it, one thing or another. But now I kept feeling, you know, it's getting better, and eventually it's going to come along, and I'm going to say, that's not hurting anymore. It just gradually went away like that. And so the rest of my body is doing what now? Well, we're rejoicing. That doesn't hurt anymore. That's the way it goes, isn't it? We know that with our own bodies. Well, now in the body of Christ, that's the way it's supposed to be as well. If one member is rejoicing, we're rejoicing. If one member is weeping, we're weeping. It should be the same way. We know this and we function as a unit. Now, I think we went over this, but we're going to look at it again. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 26. Let's look over there. It says, if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. So he's saying the same thing over there. Now, verse 16 tells us that a Christian must display an attitude of brotherhood. In verse 16, it says, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. This kind of goes along with a statement that's rather popular. It's been popular for a number of years, but brethren need to be on the same page. That works out in the idea of brotherhood. It can't just be, you know, some renegade somewhere or someone who just decides to go against the grain and things like that. When I was a little boy, I used to like watch a show on TV that would go out into the wilds of Africa, and they would show the animals there and so on. I liked it for a number of reasons. I liked it because, well, it was different. It was Africa. I understood that was another country that I'd probably never see. But also, there were all these animals. You know, I'm pretty sure that in southern Indiana, we were at a poverty when it came to things like water buffaloes and elephants and lions running around. Didn't see all, but you could watch these, you'd watch them on TV, and you could see all these things. And they would have this herd of animals. Now, I don't remember what kind they were. They resembled antelope or deer, something like that, to me. So you got an idea about the size of them. And they all moved in a unit. all of them. And then they would point out that there would always be animals that were predators, oftentimes following after this group of animals. That's right. And I never thought about it then, but as time went on, I thought to myself, you know, a group of people, it just seems like in a group of people that there's somebody that finally decides in that group of people, well, I'm just going to kind of go my own way. I'm just going to strike off for new ground and leave the group here and head off over there. You know, one of those. Or everybody's going that way, I'm going to go this way. This has always seemed like somebody like that. Somewhere. Doesn't want to go with everybody else. Well, sometimes people lack the idea of brotherhood and they want to strike out on their own. Some kind of new ground, or they want to go a different direction, and it just it's always that way with them. Now, in the herd in Africa, when one of those in the herd decide to do that, he's pretty well toast. You know what I mean? Those predators were waiting and watching for something like that. Go up on their own, or come up lame and get behind, whatever it was, they're watching. What about as a group of Christians when somebody does that? Well, the devil's like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He's looking for that one. Strike off on their own, or break new ground, or everybody's going this direction, I'm going to go the other. It's something to consider, isn't it? But we're really all supposed to be on the same page. There's really no room for some kind of personal agenda. Now, I know that there's a lot of places, a lot of people, I think even sometimes in churches, that kind of thing is applauded. But that's really not it, is it? Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 23. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I may win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you. What's he talking about here? Well, he's certainly not talking about being a rebel or radical and just, you know, I'll just do it my way and everybody else will just have to just come out the best they can. He's not saying that. He's talking about conformity. I think today this is something that gets left out in a lot of places. When you read or hear about someone having trouble in a certain area and one thing or another, a lot of times it's those, they're just not willing to go along with conformity. They're not willing to be like-minded. I've got to be different. And a lot of times, it's I've got to be different just for the sake of being different. Not to add something different as a contribution, but to add something that's different to kind of just throw everything offline. We've lost this idea of conformity. But I believe that you see that here in verses 19 through 23. So there's no room for a personal agenda. It actually calls for conformity. And we find out, if we continue over here to the book of Ephesians, and in Ephesians chapter 4, take a look at verse 16. From whom the whole body, joined and fit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. We're all supposed to be striving together, one mind, conforming, going in the same direction, not being radical and being different for the sake of being different. But we're doing all this in order to build things up. Now, another thing is that while we display an attitude of brotherhood, there's absolutely no place for conceit. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, in the chapter on love, in verses 4 and 5, you find this, how love suffers long and is kind, does not envy, love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, and thinks no evil. One of the things you find out is that conceited people are always unaware that they are conceited. And a person who finally is discovered to just be useless is generally a person who's pretty well full of themselves. You know that part in there in verse 4 where it talks about not puffed up? I remember one time thinking about that and wondering what that was, so I don't know how it all happened, but I investigated it. And I come to find out the Greek word here is a word that's taken from the trades in the first century. And it describes something. Now, you've seen this when you go to an old-time blacksmith shop. And at the blacksmith shop, they'll have that big lever, and he pulls that big lever, and over there, why, it looks like he's got a great big bellows, and that blows air on the fire, causes the fire to go up. And you got the same thing on a smaller scale in a fireplace. You operate it in my hand. It's a bellows. That's what it is. Well, that thing and the word used for that is the parent word of what you have here. That's the noun part of it. Here you have the verb part. So it says here that love suffers long, is kind, does not envy, does not parade itself. It's not a bellows. And you're thinking to yourself, I'm sure, what's that mean? Well, you know what a bellows is? A bellows is a windbag. Love's not puffed up. It's not a windbag. And I might add here, full of its own wind. You see? And when you think about this idea of conceited, well, that's a pretty good description of it. But love's not that way. And we're not supposed to be that way either. We are supposed to be of one mind. And Paul again brings that up in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 27. Now, our final point in Romans chapter 12 is verses 17 through 21. A Christian must treat his enemies with kindness. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I understand that you see the idea of retaliation lurking around in these passages as well. But as we pointed out, yes, the world operates on a sizable point of revenge and or retaliation. But Christians aren't supposed to be engaged in that. But you know, sometimes that's difficult to do, isn't it? Now, it's not just doing something to somebody. How about saying something? Somebody said something to you, you know. Somebody zinged you. And you want to say something back. And sometimes that's kind of hard not to do that. But Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek, doesn't he? That's what he says. And that's not all that he has to say. Let's look at those passages there in Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 41, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Well, he's actually saying to, you know, go beyond just doing nothing. He says, you are, you should actually do something. But you turn the other cheek. What else does he say there? If he sues you and wants your tunic, well, give him your cloak. Or go be the 2-mile man. Don't just go 1 mile, go 2. The Roman officials, a soldier, could stop someone on the road and compel them to carry that soldier's gear for a mile. And that's carried more than that. But he was required by Roman law to do that kind of thing. And the roads were all marked out with mile markers. And a person might go along and be compelled to do 1 mile and might just be a little bit of grumbling and mumbling and carrying on for that whole mile. But he says, you know, now let's go 2 miles. And then you see there at the end that you give to him who asks, don't, you know, be first of all, don't be so eager and quick to turn someone away. Be willing to offer help and assistance. We need to remember, as it says there in Romans chapter 12, that vengeance belongs to God, does not belong to us. Our purpose, as it also says in Romans chapter 12, is to be kind to an enemy. Turn to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6, and we'll look at verse 35. Love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great. You will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and evil. I've always been intrigued by those verses over there in Romans chapter 12. Where about if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirst, give him a drink. I don't think your enemy would be expecting that. So you do the unexpected. And a result of that, there's been many cases where it stops the enemy right in their tracks. Sometimes it even turns the enemy all the way around. But it won't happen if we just decide to act like the world and operate on revenge and retaliation and seek vengeance for ourselves. When we seek vengeance for ourselves, that's what we're seeking. We're not seeking justice like so many people think it is. We're just looking for revenge, not justice. Those are words that are nowhere near connected to each other. We always want to remember, when we look at these passages, as well as the others in Romans chapter 12, as guidelines excuse me, for Christian living, that a Christian, as he's out here in the world, is expected to bring glory and honor to God and to His Son. Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, let your light so shine before men. And I think these passages that we've looked at in these three lessons are passages, are teaching, are guidelines that our light can shine. Well, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and then glorify your Father in heaven. The lesson is yours. I appreciate your attention tonight. You might take your song books, turn to the song that's been selected. Might be someone here tonight that might have a desire to respond to the gospel invitation. This is the right time and this is the right place. If there is one tonight, I don't think there is, but if there is one tonight that would like to lay hold on to salvation by believing in Jesus Christ being baptized, now's the opportunity to do that. And also, if there would be one who has fallen by the wayside, correction needs to be made, we'd be happy to pray with you and for you. But if you're subject to the gospel invitation, we would urge, exhort, and plead with you to come while together we sing the song that's been selected.